And welcome to the seventh episode of the Field Pass Podcast. As always, I'm Asher Miller, and today we have another great guest. He's the former broadcaster of the Philadelphia 76ers, as well as the host of Fresh 24 Zumoff, Mark Zumoff. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for the introduction, and thank you so much for promoting my podcast on your podcast.
No problem. We got a great interview. We got a deep dive into your career, as well as a lot of Sixers talk. So that being said, sit back, relax, and welcome down to the field. First up, did you get a chance to watch Jason Kelce's retirement speech?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I didn't actually sit there while he was delivering it. It really confirms what I've thought about him all along, and that is that he's an everyman.
Yeah.
That he's the big burly guy. He's the sensitive soft type. He's not afraid to be emotional and cry. He's a husband. He's a father. He's funny. He can be in the suite, or he could jump out of the suite and be among the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why he's loved not only in Philly, certainly, but by a lot of people nationwide, football fans, sports fans in general, just because he has really shown himself to be so lovable and so genuine.
Right. Yeah. He says in his speech, he says it takes a certain breed of athletes to play in Philadelphia. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, let's put it this way. If you're an athlete who is interested in giving 100%, who is devoted to his sport, who is committed to winning, to being a team player, to doing whatever is necessary to win as an individual and part of a collective, well, then it's not hard. It's easy and it's fine. We demand that our athletes give the same effort that we feel we give at work or to our families or anything else that we're responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
We are, if not, I know people a lot of times will say that Philadelphia is a blue collar city, and it is in many respects, but it's more of a blue collar ethic that I think permeates throughout. And that includes law offices and doctor's offices and other white collar occupations where we are just brought up with the mentality that it's a day's work and it's a day's pay and you give 100% effort and that's it. And so, you know, in my mind, to me, if you're committed to all the things that you should be committed to as a professional athlete, it's not hard. If you're one of those who starts to give attitude or your mind wanders or you're not committed to the program, well, then believe me, as fans, we'll let you know.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've seen it with athletes in the past and you've seen some athletes literally get booed out of Philadelphia. And now we're going to go a little off topic here into a little bit of your career. What was it like calling your first Sixers game?
I actually do remember that very well. It was 1994. And I remember we were at the, well, I guess it was the Spectrum. It was before the Wells Fargo Center. We had spent a couple of years at the Spectrum. And I just remember looking around and saying to myself, this is the culmination of everything I ever wished for, starting when I was a kid growing up in Northeast Philly. I was an 11-year-old kid. And we used to listen to AM radio and we had disc jockeys.
Mm-hmm.
And the disc jockeys did something called talking up a record. And Asher, what that was they would give the weather or some kind of announcement while the introduction of the song was going. And then they would suddenly stop talking and the lyrics would come in. And I was fascinated by this and I would do it myself with a record player because that was state of the art then. And I came to realize that I enjoyed that, the rhythm of speaking and, you know, just being an announcer.
Yeah.
And of course, I was a sports fan as well. So I immediately gravitated toward the art of play-by-play. And I started turning the sound down of the TV and doing games into a tape recorder. And believe me, when I was sitting there getting ready to do my first Sixers game, knowing that as an 11-year-old, I always wanted to be the voice of the Philadelphia 76ers. And now I was actually doing it.
Yeah.
It was surreal. In fact, now that I sit here, having been retired for close to 3 years, it's still surreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were certainly one of the greats, in my opinion. I remember watching all of like Sixers games, the ones I can remember, all those famous sayings, locking all windows and doors when the team made a great defensive stop on the play, we're coming in for a landing when the team's coming into a close game. That was just truly great to watch. And this is going to be another part of your career. What was it like watching AI and the 2001 team, and how do you think he changed the culture of the NBA?
So there's a lot there to unpack. First of all, I think that in the minds of a lot of Sixers fans, when you consider eras, I was most identified with that era.
Right.
That doing Allen Iverson's games and providing the voice track for some of the sensational things that he did are the memories I think that people have most in mind when they consider my career with the Sixers and what it is that I did. Iverson, I think, helped to usher in the, we'll call it the coming together of sports and entertainment by bringing in, through his actions, through his dress, through his hairstyle, the hip-hop culture and bringing it into the basketball mainstream. And so now, of course, that's commonplace. There is a lot of our culture that's devoted to watching the coming together of basketball and entertainment. There are people who kind of swing both ways. A lot of athletes try to fashion themselves as rappers. Mm-hmm. We'll see on All-Star Weekend a lot of artists, black and white, who are really good basketball players, and they enjoy that aspect of it. And so I think that he really helped to usher in that whole coming together of entertainment and sports, which now we sort of accept as commonplace.
Right. Yeah. I used to watch like old Allen Iverson clips, and I still do. I watch him on YouTube, and he looks like he was the most fun player to ever play on the basketball court. And I don't know if you saw, but he's getting a statue outside Wells Fargo Center, I believe. What do you think the statue should be?
I did see that. And in fact, I've actually been asked by the Sixers to host the ceremony. So I'm pretty familiar with what it is that's going on. And that'll be, I believe it's April 12th, which is a Friday. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been to the Sixers training complex, there is literally, they call it Legends Walk. Yeah. And it's a walk from the parking lot to the main entrance where players will come in. So they sort of have to kind of go by this garden of statues, so to speak. And it's pretty much an homage to all the retired numbers from Dolph Shays and Moses Malone, Will Chamberlain, Dr. J, and all the rest. And now Iverson is going to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And it's funny you would ask what the statue is going to look like or the sculpture is going to look like, because typically, they try to come up with some sort of look that is emblematic of the way the player played. So it's, you know, Doc going in like this, or it's Bobby Jones diving for a loose ball. In the case of Iverson, I would fully expect that it's him with the basketball and the ball is out here to his side and he's getting ready to do a crossover. That's what I would expect the sculpture to come up with for him.
See, I think it might be a little too hard, but I think it could be the step over, because I think that's a very
But then would you have to have something representing Tyronn Lue there on the ground? I'm not quite sure, but that's an interesting one. That is that's something I didn't think of, and that would require some real creativity on the part of the sculptor, I think.
Yes, it would. And now moving a little out of Allen Iverson's time, what was it like watching the process, though, the years of the process?
Well, it was certainly an unconventional way to rebuild a team. It required a lot of patience on the part of everyone, not the least of which would be the fans, who were coming to games knowing that the team really didn't have the opportunity to do much of anything. As far as being a broadcaster is concerned, there were a number of reasons for me, I guess, to not be so excited, or for my attention to wane, or my work ethic to drop. But you have to remember, one, it's a real privilege to be the TV voice of the Sixers, even if they're not that good of a team. Plus, there's the responsibility of doing your job when you are getting paid to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I really didn't need that much motivation. Once I put the headset on, you know, I was into the game. I enjoyed performing. I knew what it meant to be the voice of the Sixers. I knew it was my responsibility as an occupation to perform well. And what I learned was that because your team wasn't that good, many times you had to focus on the opponent. Right. And so, hey, LeBron James is coming in tonight, or this player is coming in tonight, Kevin Durant, whatever. Hmm. And many times that would become the focus. And you would only hope that one of the process teams, you know, teams that won, you know, any, in fact, 1 year, I think they won only 10 games, would be competitive enough to make it a game. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, many times they weren't.
Right. Yeah. I feel like those were painful days, but I can't really recall a lot of them. But I mean, do you think it paid off now in the long run?
When you say payoff, you have to, I think, ultimately look at the ultimate, which is a championship.
Right.
Which is a hard thing to do anyway, whether you rebuild a team through the draft or free agency, or in the case of the process, gutting the team and then getting good draft picks and using cap room later on to sort of fill in. I would say in that respect, well, let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. No one in the Sixers organization is happy with the fact that they haven't gotten past the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
So from that aspect, it has not been a success. Mm-hmm. If they could somehow make their way to at least one final in the Joel Embiid era and give him a chance to play for a title, then at least there might be an argument for that, because it's even hard to get to the finals, right, let alone win a championship. And so I'll let others be the judge. You know, once Joel's time in Philly has come to an end, to look back and see what a kind of a success, if anything, it was or wasn't.
So you saw Joel Embiid come in as a rookie when he had his injury his first year in the NBA. How much do you think he's grown, and how much do you think he's got better? And what was it like watching the growth of Joel Embiid throughout his years, and his year still going right now?
The irony, of course, is that Joel was injured and spent 2 years not playing, even before he did play.
Right.
So, unfortunately, it was a sign of things to come. He was drafted after only 1 year of college, and even then it wasn't a full season. So there was some speculation, and the fact that he had only taken up the game as, you know, a high schooler, pretty much, 14 or 15 years old, a lot of people weren't sure. But as he began to heal and as he began to work out with the coaches and develop his game, we as broadcasters or members of the front office or coaches were the only ones who were allowed to see these practices. And basically, it was a lot of time spent going one-on-one with assistant coaches and whatnot, teaching him the game, teaching him post-play and how to be a big man in the NBA. Well, as we watched him and saw his growth, there was a lot of internal excitement. And we couldn't say anything to the public, because nobody with the organization was really allowed to say anything about Joel and his future. But I have to tell you that it was really a truly amazing experience watching him get better, watching him embrace the game, watching him get coached, and to develop into the kind of player that he eventually would become. And now unfortunately, he was having a historic season before he got hurt.
Yeah.
So the hope now is, I guess, that he can come back in some form or fashion. And I don't know how they're going to expect to gel, if at all, and make some kind of a run here. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing with Joel Embiid, and obviously he's a great player, but the one thing is just his injuries every year. I feel like every year it's a different thing with him, which is the only thing that bugs me.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and it's something we've had to live with as members of the media, as fans. It's really a very difficult situation. And the Sixers have clearly said to themselves, meaning the owners and the front office, listen, this is a once-in-a-lifetime talent. We feel as though he could help to lead us to a championship. And so we're going to stay with him, at least for now, knowing that he has a history of injuries, in the hopes that we can, through proper management and everything else that goes into conditioning today's athletes, to keep him healthy enough to be able to win a championship. Can that happen? I'm not a soothsayer. I don't know. But, you know, hope is always there to spring eternal.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess we will see if he can come back this year. And this is going to tie into the next point. The 2018-19 Sixers, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, Tobias Harris, J.J. Redick, Joel Embiid. Do you think if they beat Toronto in that series and that shot did not go in, do you think they would be holding up the Larry O'Brien trophy right now?
I had T.J. McConnell on my podcast and posed that question to him, and he gave a pretty big affirmative to the scenario that you just painted, that they would have gotten by Toronto, that they would have gone to the finals, and that they would have won that year. I do have it on pretty good authority from a media member who I trust who is at the game. I'm there like everybody else watching on TV, that the Raptors were gassed at the end of that game. And they were not about to win that game in overtime, that the Sixers looked like the better team, that it seemed as though they were functioning better, that they would have been fresher than the Raptors in overtime and would have prevailed and gone on. And then, of course, if they do go on, even if they just get to the conference finals, maybe they keep Jimmy Butler and figure out a way to do that. Maybe they trade Ben Simmons instead, or maybe they keep both and find a way for them to share the ball.
Right.
But there are a lot of what ifs there, and it's not something we can revisit anymore because Butler went away and the rest is history.
Right. Yeah. I think that was a really good team. I think they had a legitimate shot if they beat Toronto. And I don't know. That was a really crushing loss, and I know it was for everybody. But I just think that the way that season ended, it should not have ended like that. And that was crushing. So, and now I want to hear your Mount Rushmore of Philadelphia 76ers all time.
I'm an old school guy, so I'm going to start with Wilt.
Okay.
And just because he's Wilt Chamberlain. And for his era, was clearly the most dominant player and one who still holds records that will not be broken. I would have to say after that, and this is difficult for me to leave guys out, but Julius Erving, only because of what he not only represented for the franchise, but for basketball in general, and the way he made the game a lot more airborne and introduced the artistry that he showed so elegantly, particularly in the American Basketball Association, where a lot of footage isn't available, but he was just absolutely unbelievable. Charles Barkley, just because he was not your normal player in terms of a guy who was really about 6'5 and 260 pounds. Yet had uncanny quickness and really embellished what Hubie Brown used to say. It's not how big you are, it's how big you play. Yes, he was broad, but he could jump out of a building. He understood how to read the ball off the rim and could use his girth and his leaping ability to his advantage as a great rebounder, and really had just a tremendous sense of the game.
Yeah.
And then I would just have to say Iverson. Okay. Who, unfortunately, like Barkley, was not able to win a title as a Sixer, but really just like Barkley, had an unbelievable ability for a guy his size, and really, especially during that 2001 run, was able to encapsulate the feeling of an entire city, that whole blue-collar ethic, playing in spite of injuries, and that kind of underdog look about him. He was only like 6 feet, 160 pounds. That really, really made the city fall in love with him.
Mm-hmm. That is a great, 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 great top four right there. Do you have a specific call that you can remember that was like your greatest call ever?
I always say the game that I remember the most enjoyable for me was in the 1998-99 season. So that was a season that was only 50 games long because of a lockout. We weren't even sure we were going to play. By the end of the lockout shortened season, the Sixers finished sixth and the Orlando Magic finished as the three seed. So they played each other. And the Sixers managed to split the first two games with Orlando. It was only a best of five back then. And the Sixers came back to Wells Fargo Center. It was named something else then. This is their first playoff game ever in that building. Wow. It was their first home playoff game in 8 years. And the fans were so excited that, I know this wasn't the case, but you would swear that they were standing the entire game, that they never sat. And the place was in an uproar. The Sixers were just energized in a way that just created an unbelievable amount of electricity in the building. Iverson was out of his mind. I think he had an NBA record 10 steals in that game. He was just all over the place. There were some near fights. There was a lot of physical play. Sixers ended up winning. They ended up winning the series. And that, to me, was my favorite all-time game. And my favorite call was T.J. McConnell's winner. Mm-hmm. Against the New York Knicks.
Loose ball taken by Henderson. Sixers don't call the timeout. Here's Ilyasova. Here's McConnell. Can he get it off? Yes! And the Sixers win it!
That, to me, was sort of a coming out party for the process. Mm-hmm. That, I think, was the 28-win team. Yeah. Where they finally show that they were able to compete and beat. I think that might have been his rookie season. And, you know, the ability to pull out games like that where they really didn't have that ability to do it before. And that, to me, I think was my favorite all-time single call.
I mean, that's great. I remember that T.J. McConnell coming all the way down full court, turnaround baseline jumper. That was a great, 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 great looking shot. And for the final point for you, what would you tell somebody trying to get into the broadcasting business?
So I think, and I want to apply this to anybody who has a dream. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of prerequisites to achieving that dream. You could certainly say luck, though I do believe that we have the ability to create a certain amount of our own luck, right place, right time, through effort, through hard work, that kind of thing. I think as far as being a sportscaster, sports media professional, whatever you want to call it, you certainly have to have a varied skill set. So the ability to be in front of the camera, behind the camera, the ability to edit, shoot, do social media, write for print, pretty much be able to do everything and anything. The work ethic to know your subject and understand what it is that you are covering, whether it's as a reporter or play-by-play person, what have you. And then probably the two most important things, the second most important thing when you're breaking into any field that is difficult to break into is the ability to put yourself out there and network and meet people. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't like to do that sort of thing, I think you have to figure out a way to do it. Right. And I think one of the ways to motivate yourself is the fact that you want to achieve a dream. And if you think that this is something that's within your grasp, and you don't want to live with any kind of regret that you did not try and achieve that dream, well, this is one of the ways that you have to do it, is through networking. Because in a competitive environment, oftentimes it's not about your resume. It's not even about what sort of work you've done in the past, although those two things are certainly very important. But the tiebreaker in a situation like that can be? Who can you get as a reference? Who can you get to recommend you for a job? Who can you get to tell you about the job before it becomes public knowledge so that you have a leg up on the competition? And then the most important thing, Asher, is to believe in yourself. And I think that's necessary for two reasons. One, there is a lot of rejection, so that when you lose out, even when you think you're better than the person who got the job, you have to continue to soldier on. And the way that, to do that is to believe that you can do it and you can pick yourself back up and, you know, get after the next opportunity. It is important, I think, to surround yourself with people who believe in you, but you ultimately have to be able to believe in yourself. And you also have to believe in yourself because there's that old phrase, be careful what you wish for.
Right.
You can have a dream and then achieve that dream, and then it's time to do it. You look around and say, wow, I'm actually here. I hope I can do it. No, you have to know you can do it
right
at that particular time. So believing in yourself is at the top, and the ability to network and meet people is 1A.
Mm-hmm. Right. My dad tells me all the time, you know, trying to get into the podcast business, he's like, believe in yourself, reach out to these people, go above and beyond to do this, because it's going to help out so much in the long run. And I've taken his advice, and here we are.
Here we are. Here I am. There you go.
Thank you again so much for doing this. I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.